majority of those stations that let people like myself speak and tell them what was going on the other side, those stations are gone. If we lose WBAI, where do we go to get our words out? Where do we go if you've been arrested unjustly? Where do you go if someone's taken your children unfairly? Where do you go to seek justice? We must keep this station alive. Yeah. Alive. WBAI.
No justice.
This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
Yes, indeed, and it is 9 p.m. WBAI New York, streaming at WBAI.org. And in just one moment, as soon as we get the recording rolling, it's time for Untitled with Malika Lee Whitney. Do stay tuned.
Good evening, Malika Lee Whitney here. Our theme, Home, Hearth, and Heat. You'll get the meaning shortly. On this week's edition, we're offering neighborhood narratives and impacts on housing, houses of worship, and habitat. Invited guests include Reverend Nigel Pierce of Grace Congregational Church in Harlem, Vanessa Walsh, community advocate, will share the 411 on the proposed sale of the Harlem River houses and the efforts that are rallying against it. We revisit the acclaimed documentary Decade of Fire with Vivian Vasquez Irizarry and Neda Martinez, Rosalba Rolon of Pregones Theater, Puerto Rican Traveling Theater, I should say. We'll talk about an upcoming production entitled Torched, A People Ignited. And we'll bring the heat, y'all. You can be sure about that. But right now, a little music from C.C. Winer, Believe in Us. You're trying to do so, sending you some peace and power and love.
Thank
Reverend
you.
Dr. Nigel Pierce is on the line, and you've been a pastor at Grace Congregational Church in Harlem for how long now?
15 years.
Oh, that's tenure almost.
Yeah.
Share with us, if you will, give us the thumbnail sketch, because I know there's some history connected to that house of worship, and also some important things you're seeking to do to continue the legacy. And I know some interesting folks, not that I know them personally, but I've been advised that you've had some highlights happening with respect to those who have come through the doors. So it's on you now.
It has a rich history dating all the way back to the Amistad and the AMA, which started over 500 black colleges and schools throughout America. And it was important. They thought that they had educated pastors. And so our first pastor in 1923 had his doctorate from Howard University. And we've had a rich African-American history since 1923 up until today. I am the seventh pastor there. And we have been in the midst of trying to reimagine church in the last 7 years and rebuild church and make it fit towards our sort of what is happening in the world today. Low-income housing is very much needed in Harlem. We had 8 units. We were expanding to 42. And we are also looking to create community centers where other things in the community could happen in the church space that we would like to refit and reimagine.
There are some things that need a fixing in the church. So I would imagine this idea to elevate has taken a lot of thought and consideration. So be specific about your goals and what it is you're seeking to do and how you're going about it, and I guess the obstacles that you may be facing in the process.
So many obstacles you face. You can imagine a 150-year-old building, which has a lot of history and certainly a lot of sentimental and sacred value. And so it was difficult to get people to even consider changing the look and feel of the building. But it was important in order to be able to survive and move forward for the next generation, because church, which used to survive on Sunday morning givings, really can't do that any longer. And so economically, they don't work, and they need to find a way to diversify and be able to survive and support mission and programs. And so one of the obstacles we faced recently was Landmark. We were not Landmark when we first started the project. In fact, when we filed the plans with Department of Buildings in 2019, we were not Landmark. Landmark just came about June 15th of this year, which causes us not to be able to do the plans we're doing or to change, you know, any of the facade or to build the building that we wish to build. And so we're in the midst of trying to get either a carve-out or for them to reconsider the plans and allow us to either modify the plans so it works for them and works for us. And that's where we're at in the moment.
And how close are you to realizing that kind of understanding? I would imagine it takes lots of meetings and Zoom calls or whatever else. What is it that you have to prove, for example?
Well, it not so much prove, but they really want it to still continue to look the same way. And that's hard because we're going from a steeple building to a 7-story building, which would house the housing units that we're looking to have. So the use is very different. And we're okay with if the front of it or the facade needs to have a similar look and feel to what it was in the past. But we do need everything behind it to be brand new and to be outfitted very differently than churches fitted today. And so that's the obstacles. There are supposed to be public hearings because it is now Landmarked. We are going back to Landmark to meet with them early in December to either get a carve out, redraw the plans, and then if we do come to an agreement, there are hearings that have to be heard through Community Board 10 and also get the buy-in of the community as well.
And mentioning community, what's the community support element like? You know, because the people in the surrounding areas who are also part of I guess, what's being landmarked. What kind of support are you receiving from community?
We are receiving, especially from the political folks, have given us a tremendous amount of backing. They understand, they know the importance of Grace Community Church, the community in the community. And so residents are supporting us. They know that they want to see us survive. Churches are just not places of worship. They provide so many other services that are not picked up by government agencies. And so the food pantry, AA, and many of the other programs that we provide there really are for everyone, not just for the folks that go to church on Sunday morning. So many services would be lost if this church could not survive.
I would imagine it's very important to your long, loyal parishioners.
Very important. You know, we have one lady who's been going to this church for 75 years, and so she wants to make sure that it has a even longer and greater future than the one she had with it. So she's enjoyed 75 beautiful years with Grace Church, and she certainly wants to see a legacy of what Grace meant to her and her family. You know, weddings, funerals.
To achieve the development that you have in mind, that requires some backing. I happen to be familiar with the fact that you have spent some time in the areas of what we call Cheddar and Cha-Ching, you know, Wall Street, and you left that to answer the calling. So the resources, where are they emanating from?
So I'm grateful for my background in investment banking. When I did sit down with the developer, we interviewed several, and we knew that there wasn't a huge amount of profit in there, but we wanted to make sure we had a developer who had deep pockets and had the ability to finance it without a bank and to put the project together. And that's what we did. We found a partner who could finance it for us and partner with us, because after it's all said and done, we would be partners in the new building. We would own the church, which would be the first two levels outright, and continue the low-income housing as we had desired.
And there are some attached properties beside the church. What happens with them?
So one of the brownstones was to come down and expand the footprint, and that's how we were getting almost 52,000 square foot of building in that space. There's another side alley and a brownstone next to us, which we own, but it was given to us through a parishioner who said it is always to remain a brownstone, so we are honoring that restriction that was given to us. And we will continue to keep that as a brownstone and just refurbish it.
Well, I'm going to ask that you certainly keep me informed, our listeners informed of the progress. And I think it will be something that we'll be delighted to know the outcome of. So I do believe, as the expression goes, you know, from your mouth and your wishes to the Creator's ear. So we'll see how that works. And if you're just joining us, the program is Untitled. I'm Malika Lee Whitney. My guest online is the Reverend Dr. Nigel Pierce, Grace Congregational Church in Harlem. And by way of transparency, we are fellow seminarians, so I don't have any immediate vested interest, but I'll check out the space when it rises. So thank you so much, Reverend Dr. Nigel Pierce, and we look forward to speaking to you again with the follow-up. And I should add that One Spirit Interfaith Seminary has served us both well, as has your affiliation, of course, with the New York Theological Seminary. And Harlem resident you are, born in Brooklyn, raised in Long Island, so I guess that gives you some street cred. My pleasure to speak with you, and I look forward to seeing you again. My best to yourself, of course, and your loved ones. Take care. Listeners, stay tuned, because coming up is more music this time from Whitney Houston, Step by Step, and we'll be speaking with Vanessa Walsh, community advocate. Hang in there, y'all.
Well, there's a bridge and there's a river that I still must cross as I'm going on my journey. Though I might be lost, and there's a road I have to follow, a place I have to go. Well, no one told me just how to get there. But when I get there, I know, 'cause I'm taking it.
Vanessa Walsh?
Yes, hi.
Good evening. So pleased am I to have you on the radio. Vanessa,
thank you for having me.
Is a community advocate, and she's been very active in health and human services for many years and has an amazing biographical background, and we're grateful for that. The reason for our connection has to do with a flyer that I pulled off a brick wall. And it had to do with the fact that NYCHA has proposed a plan to sell the Harlem River Houses, a landmark housing complex. And I know that there's some community forces that don't want that to happen. So would you please just outline what it is that you can share that will give our listeners some insight on what's going on in that regard?
Well, sure. It's not just Harlem River Houses. They plan on privatizing all of NYCHA. However, like you said, we are a landmark, but that doesn't matter to them. What this is about is this privatization, gentrification, and displacement of us and making public housing private, which takes away our rights, which were covered under Section 9, and they're trying to give us Section 8. Section 9 protects our rights. Section 8 doesn't. And they want us to sign these leases to a management company called CNC, which I call them CNC mismanagement because they're slumlords. They don't do right by tenants. They are, you know, a lot of our tenants, especially the elderly here, they're worried. You know, they're using intimidation tactics trying to get them to sign leases. I have one elderly neighbor. She doesn't speak English, but she came to our meeting because we have meetings at the church. And, you know, her lease is up next month, and they gave her an eviction notice. How can you do that when HUD has not signed off on this conversion? So we're trying to fight. We're fighting hard, like all we can, with a group called UFAD, United Front Against Displacement. And we have informational and discussions on gentrification at the church, the Resurrection Chapel, trying to educate the tenants and let them know, try to learn them their rights so that they can understand that they do not have to sign these leases. They don't. They're promising everybody new apartments and stainless steel refrigerators and stoves. And I just went to my neighbor's house next door. He has a little 1950 stove, same old little refrigerator that never worked. The mold is still in his bathroom. It's just like, it's really an egregious situation, and we're doing all we can. A group of us, we're trying to make it grow. We're grand houses. We work with as many NYCHA developments that want to work with us to try to stop this. But we need, like, more help, more people to unite. You know, they're dangling the little trinkets in front of their faces that they're not going to get, and it's really unfair. You know, people.
When did you initially find out that these plans were underway?
Okay, I noticed, like, when there was the beginning of the pandemic, this entity called Rad Pact started coming with the Tenants Association president, and they were giving out food. So it's like, okay, I'm like, Rad Pact, let's look this up. And then I started reading about what they are and what they wanted to do. So while we were in a pandemic, they had a plandemic to change and gentrify and privatize all of NYCHA. This came down from Greg Russ. This is the guy that's in charge of NYCHA now. And this is a nationwide issue. It's in Boston. It's in Oakland. It's in San Francisco. It's the Bay Area. This man has been through all these places, privatizing and literally knocking down some projects, leaving people without anywhere to live. And in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, Williams Plaza, they didn't know what they were getting into, and they signed these leases, and now they have brown water, lead water, asbestos in the middle of their houses, while their children are home. It has to stop, and we're going to keep fighting until we find some way to stop this. We need media attention. You know, Chuck Schumer, he was on One NYCHA, and he was asked the question, do you think Harlem River houses should be privatized? And he said, absolutely not. This should not be happening. He gave us his right-hand man's name and number, and we spoke with him briefly. And they've both gone radio silent on the issue. No one wants to talk to us anymore.
Have you been able to connect with any of the other local politicians on this issue?
No one wants to bring the matter to the forefront. I've tried Jumaane Williams. I've tried several people, especially Mr. Schumer. The politicians, they don't want to deal with this. And Eric Adams, he supports this. So we're like on our own. We have to fight as hard as we can on our own. We protest. We hold meetings. We give out flyers. We have a paper, the Urban Core, to educate people about what's going on nationwide, not just here in New York City. But we're basically like slaves on the auction block, being sold to the highest bidders. And the highest bidders are the big banks, Bank of America, Deutsche Bank. A lot of the banks are involved in this, and it's just, I feel so much for the seniors. Like, they're afraid. I'm angry. I'm not afraid. I'm angry, and we're going to just keep fighting. We're just going to keep fighting. We're not going to sign these leases. We have Mr. Schwartz representing us, so we have faith in him, and we have faith in the man upstairs. I walk by faith, not by sight. So I believe that this is going to turn over, but it's going to take a lot of work and all the help that we can get. And I so appreciate you having me on your show to be able to express what's going on.
Oh, because this is important. Would you mention again the name of the organization that has partnered, you know, with the tenants?
Oh, sure.
You also said that it's nationwide. And one more thing. Mm-hmm. Is there contact information Because I'm sure there are listeners out there who might wish to be supportive or certainly want to learn more.
Sure.
Phone number or email address?
It's UFAD, the United Front Against Displacement. And I know you can follow us on Twitter. And let's see, I had the phone number. I gave you numbers yesterday, but I don't want to give people's numbers over the air.
No, definitely not. But if you if some folks are not as fast-fingered with Twitter,
right.
What I'll do, I do believe there's some information on the flyer that I saw, which you all have been very attentive to spreading
the
word.
Okay, I have.
I just want to allow me to reintroduce you again. I'm speaking to Vanessa Walsh, and she is a resident in the Harlem River Houses, which, as I mentioned at the outset, there are some plans afoot to sell that development, which is a landmark complex. So as Vanessa mentioned, these kinds of actions are not only happening here in New York, but other urban sites as well. So what I'll ask you to do, if you come across like a direct contact, let me know.
The email is no go. No go on NYC, N-O-G-O, NYC at riseup.net.
Okay, one more time, slowly, one more time.
N-O-G-O, NYC at riseup.net. And you can follow on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram if anybody wants to do that. I never did social media before, but I quickly learned how to do Twitter.
That's right. Times, they are a-changing for sure. So I want to thank you so much and appreciate you and all the ways that we've been connected. Please give my regards to Little Phoenix and
I
bless you for your beautiful and loving rearing of that wonderful little girl who I've had the pleasure of meeting. So thank you so much, Vanessa Walsh.
Thank you.
And I'll be in touch
me.
With you again soon, and we'll follow up. And I have some other suggestions that I hope to be able to offer that might be helpful. Take care. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye for now. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. We're about to bring the heat. Going to get ready to play a trailer from the film Decade of Fire, which I'm sure you will find interesting. Max, ready, ready, ready? Max needs a moment.
We grew up in rubble. We grew up with burnt out decay all over us. The South Bronx was burning down around us, and nobody seemed to know why.
Everything south of the Cross Bronx Expressway, they just let it burn, and nobody gave a damn.
And all of a sudden, neighborhoods just went, foosh, gone.
Nobody's aware of the fact that we got a city dump right here in the backyard.
Could city government allow this to happen? Who was in charge? Why? The story we were told, the story the whole world was told, was that the fires were somehow our fault. But we didn't burn the Bronx. We were the ones who saved it.
I said, no, wait a minute. I have to make my move right now.
The reason we're trying to do all these things is to show an example to the rest of the people in the neighborhood that if you just try, you could make a lot better neighborhood.
If no one else wants to fight, we'll fight. And I'm sure that I could get all the women in the Bronx to go out there and fight.
Can come in and wave a wand and do this.
We tried to get money from the city to renovate a building. Got red tape. 2-3 years maybe. 2-3 years, there might not be a Kelly Street.
This story is not just about the Bronx. There are places like this in every major city in America. Places that everyone has given up on, except for us. We came from this so-called terrible place, but we would never leave it behind.
That's the voice of Vivian Vasquez Irizarry, and she's co-director and co-producer, also an educator, coordinator of youth programs, youth development programs, and her participation in all things having to do with neighborhood and quality of life, that's what she does. We'll be joined by her on the phone, as well as with Neda Martinez. Hope these bios are updated. If not, they can certainly add to their wonderful career experiences. Interim Program Director and Associate Professor at the School of Media Studies, Media Management at the New School. She's a producer of Decade of Fire and also another film, Lucky. Greetings.
Hi, Malika. Greetings. How are you?
Okay, I hope I'll be able to distinguish the voices. So we just played the clip from a really highly acclaimed documentary, and its relevance is ever-present, you know, because it tells a story of something that has left a lasting impression on the lives of many people, and some may still not have fully recovered from the displacement and all that happened during those years. So I will begin with you, Vivian, to talk about the genesis of the film, even though I consider it not being dated, but just how this narrative piece came together for you and our community.
So thank you for having us, and thanksgiving to everyone, and gratitude and peace and love to all. I wanted to start out by saying that. So Decade of Fire came about because growing up in the South Bronx, I always heard that Puerto Ricans and African Americans, we didn't know how to take care of our neighborhoods, right? I always when I went away to college and whenever I left the South Bronx, there was always a stigma with the Bronx, right? And, you know, I went to school, I came back, I started working, and especially in youth development. And Julia Steele Allen and I, who's also one of the other co-producers of the film, along with Gretchen Hildebrand, we went to teach. We set out to teach a curriculum to young people about Bronx history. And at that time, that curriculum was not accepted because it was considered a little too radical. You know, it was claimed that we sort of glorified hip-hop and graffiti, but we saw it as a real expression of art that, you know, the way that our young people, my generation, we were expressing ourselves. So, you know, little by little, we decided to put together something in writing. And then lo and behold, the idea came up was to do a film about why the Bronx was destroyed, right? So at that point, it wasn't just the fires. It was like, what happened to the Bronx? Why? And then in discovering, you know, 80% of the housing stock burned, you know, I met up with a lot of the folks from my old neighborhood, and we talked about the real good old times, but we also talked about the devastation that was left behind. So Decade of Fire came out of like, okay, so let's really find out what was it that took place and what led to the destruction, not only of housing, but of just the destruction of the community in general.
Yes. I want to shift to bring Neda Martinez into the conversation. Your work is legendary in so many different areas, and I only mention a little bit about you, but being on this film has so much educational value, and since you're in the realm and sphere of learning, are there ways in which you have used the film, either through screenings or discussions around the economic, the social, and all the other psychological impacts that, come out of, you know, what changes to our livelihood means and what happens as a result? So your thoughts on that, please.
Oh, well, absolutely. The film was made with the intention of putting it in the hands of youth who are today facing displacement and fighting gentrification and perhaps not knowing the web of nefarious conditions that triggered this decade of fire, like Vivian said, not only in the 70s, but still, you know, how it was foretelling of a dawn of a dire period. And so we were committed to make sure that all of our community groups had access to the film. If you visit us on decadeoffire.com, you can access the film, but you can also learn about all of the screenings that we've had, and we continue to have screenings at universities and with partners such as AARP online and in person all over the country so that they can learn from the patterns in history, of course, of the underlying inequities in our poor communities that are impacted. And we're still disproportionately impacted, as we know, under the COVID pandemic, so that we wanted to make sure that young people and community that are trying to fend for themselves can see the pattern of how everyday unsung heroes literally went into those buildings and built up the community and did it for themselves, because they know that there's no substitute for grassroots organizing and the spirit of engagement, and that as a society, we need people of all colors and ethnicities working together in common cause and loving change to fight for justice.
It's also notable that the film was picked up, aired on PBS and other outlets. So how was the outreach in that way, you know, to have all those eyes on the screen impacted the reception that the film received?
Well, the film premiered, Vivian, it was in 2018 at Duck NYC, a film festival in New York City. The community showed up loud and proud. And then a year later, yes, we had support from the Ford Foundation and ITVS, which is funnels money through the for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and Independent Lenses, the public television series that showed us. And in fact, we actually won the 2020 Audience Award for that series. And for PBS members, they can still see the film free, and membership for public television is really affordable, even just a few bucks a month. Or you can see it for a nominal charge on any one of the streamers that we link you to through our website.
Right. Vivian, if you would, those changes, as I move in and around the Bronx, I see some tall buildings going up. Who are they for? Are they being, is there placement of new housing that was, that covered the areas that were most devastated by the fires? So, you know, if you could paint a picture of how that particular area that was focused on looks now and who lives there.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. As Neva talked about before, she mentioned that we shared our film with many organizations and schools, also with a number of housing justice organizations to screen the film with their membership, because what we found was that those neighborhoods who were hit hard in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s around the country were the same neighborhoods that are now being targeted for gentrification. It's almost like, you know, we did sort of a mapping, and it was almost a line. The alignment is those cities that were hit hardest are now being gentrified. And such is the case in the South Bronx, right? And, it, you know, we all know where it started, you know, the East Side, Harlem, Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, and now the South Bronx. I travel to the South Bronx quite often still, and what I am hearing and, you know, from people who are working for housing justice, and what I'm seeing and, you know, in conversations also with other people, is that those apartments are not affordable to the people who live there. And so it's not, you know, it took so long for us to, you know, develop the South Bronx, to bring services to the South Bronx. And we are now facing a huge housing crisis because people cannot afford to live in what looks like development for them. It is not for them. It is not for the people of the South Bronx. People are moving outward. People are becoming homeless. People are doubling up in apartments. People are moving to other places across the city, upstate, because they can't afford those apartments. And it's happening all over the city. That's sort of the landscape that we're in now, right?
Yes.
Just housing for all is really not happening
right.
in South Bronx.
Any thought of a follow-up in some way? Did that occur to either you and Nada?
Can you say that again, a follow-up?
Yeah, a follow-up, like a follow-up film, you know, like now, like the Bronx now versus,
even though it took 10 years to make the film, you know, we couldn't go into a lot of the history, but like we said, we wanted to make these tools available. So there's a free film that is an ancillary product called Defending Your Block, How to Stay, Fight, and Build. And Vivian, you know, uses Deck It Afire as the launching, but then she goes into a community in East L.A. and I believe in, is it Pittsburgh, Vivian? Where
yes.
you work with common present-day activists to show very recent models of how, again, community members organized and had some wins. So it's available for free, and it's on our website and on YouTube and Vimeo called Defending Your Block, How to Stay, Fight, and Build. And then similarly, we are currently in production as well of another supporting piece called The People Versus Austerity. Again, because one of the, you know, what we learned in the films was, what we learned through the research in the film is that at the height of the fires, the disinvestment, you know, where the people needed the most resources, those were the places that were disinvested. And so we're seeing these patterns again of austerity in Detroit and Puerto Rico and all over the country. So that will again be available for free, and that's currently in production. So that's how we want to expand and use this platform of Decade of Fire to continue the education process with communities.
Great. It would be helpful before we close to give the website details or whatever contacts would be helpful for our listeners to follow up with. And I really like the extension of doing what you just described, you know, because it will have an even greater impact, you know, continuing to inform
and let
community members know that, yes, we do have the power, you know, and here are the tools. So those details for contact information, let me just reintroduce Vivian Vasquez-Irizarry and Nada Martinez are my guests. And I told y'all we'd be bringing the heat. So contact information for the work that both of you are involved in, please.
So we have a Facebook page, Decade of Fire, and we have the website where you can subscribe to the newsletter at decadeoffire.com. And we can also connect you with, we can connect the film. You can email us, again, through the website, decadeoffire.com. And we've negotiated a very affordable rate with our educational distributor so that community groups that are really volunteer-based can have a screening at a nominal charge. And Vivian and I are still holding conversations with community groups very frequently.
Well, thank you both so much. This has been very informative and helpful as well. And I look forward to a very soon opportunity, as I said to you, Nada, for something closer than a long-distance hug. Okay. So we're going to move
so much,
the program
Kristen.
Along. This show is Untitled. I'm Malika Lee Whitney, and coming up will be my guest, Rosalba Rolon. She is founder and artistic director of Pregones, Puerto Rican Traveling Theater, established in 1979, Bronx-based, of course. And the Puerto Rican Traveling Theater has ensured the cultural presence of the company's work through its wide variety of performances and other expressions in the arts. And they do that around the world, beyond the Bronx. So, Max, let me know when Rosalba's on the line. And in the interim,
we're all here.
Mentioned, oh, she's here. Great. So, good evening.
Hello.
I'm so happy to hear your voice. You'll be able to listen to your sisters on the recording that I will send to you. So you can say hello to them so they'll hear it when they do the playback, won't you?
Absolutely.
So, very appreciative of Vivian and also Nada, of course. So how interesting that I should get a mailer from Fregones. I was looking, intending to look for a letter that I received from Fregones from many, many years ago, more than 20 years ago, also connected to having representatives on the air. So I'll share that with you when I locate it. But talk to us about the upcoming presentation, People Ignited. You know, that's like the subtitle, but it's called Torched. So
yes.
Talk to us about the piece.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the honor of sharing the platform with my sisters, Vivian and Nada. Big hello, saludos to them. I am in awe of the work that they have been doing, and we have been connected over the past year or so in some conversations about this, you know. So Torched is a musical theater production that is going to open next week, actually in December. It will run December 2nd to the December 19th at Fregones Theater on Walton Avenue in the Bronx. We're right there next to Hostess College. And our company has this ensemble base, and we have, as you mentioned, was established in 1979, and then over the past 4 years, we completed a merger with the Puerto Rican Traveling Theater, which was established in 1967. So the two companies became one, and it has strengthened our voice and our ability to reach out to broad audiences with productions such as this. And Torched is very much a what we call a collection piece. And one of the things that we have been noticing when we established our company as a touring company, we never anticipated to have a theater, an actual venue, in the 1979 through 1982, when, you know, and we were actually one of the tenants at Longwood Avenue in the Bronx, you know, where we had our office and rehearsal space and working locally. But while we were working locally with the support of, you know, United Bronx Parents and many other community organizations, we were traveling around the country. So that to date, you know, it's over 500 cities that we have visited in the United States and 18 countries. And the more we delved into the daily life of the Bronx, reminding you all and your audience, for example, I moved from Puerto Rico to New York in the 70s, so I did not live through that decade of fire. This is why this film is so important. And the cast, our musicians, are all were either very young or were not born yet. So here we had an opportunity to get a whole new generation of people talking about what we have heard over the years about, you know, in terms of the Bronx and its meaning for the world. And I say the world because when we found ourselves in faraway places, in Moscow, in Brazil, in Slovakia, in rural communities, far, far away, where they would be so curious about, you actually live in the Bronx? And we keep thinking, what do they think they know? And that added up and kept adding. I mean, we're talking, you know, we're talking South Africa. We're talking a lot of places. And we kept thinking, you know, the power of the media, right, when it's used like this, the power of the entertainment industry, what does it mean? And so that had been sort of adding and adding up, and we have done some projects. But frankly, one day myself and my colleagues said, we have to just target this and begin to talk about it.
Allow me to ask you, what did that seemingly expression of surprise, you know, when you travel places and then they say, the Bronx, in a certain kind of way. What were they thinking? Yeah. What impressions did they have?
Well, one particular instance in a small town, rural town in the Slovak Republic, they said, you know, you've been here like for, they said to us, for 10 days, are you afraid to go back? Are you ever afraid to go back to the Bronx? And I kept thinking, I've lived in the Bronx for 30 years. I raised my daughter there, you know. So, and most of the company lives in the Bronx. So they, when we engaged in conversation, it was what they had seen in film mostly on television. All of those, you know, big films that depicted the South Bronx. Of course, we know what the stigma and the stereotypes are. And we thought we had a sort of a double obligation, which was, one of them was to begin to serve as a link and expand our circle of friends around the world. And this is what we have been doing now for all of these years. And around the country, you know, in the United States. And that has served immensely to beautiful artistic collaborations, creative exchanges between ourselves and people from many other countries in which they, when given a choice of coming and performing in our Manhattan venue, they said, no, we want to perform in the Bronx. I mean, they have, as they tell me now so clearly, one of them wrote a beautiful poem. They got to know the Bronx through the eyes of their friends. And I said, well, just like we're here, we have years and decades of history of artists who have been committed to this. We're just one more voice, and we just thought that this production could add to the collective voice right. of the many, many
so
artists
these,
that over
the
years.
Are these vignettes? Is it music? Is it scripted productions? Is it?
Yes, it is.
You know, mm-hmm. of course, we want people to come out and see it.
Absolutely. So it is.
Give me an idea of how it flows.
There is a common story, and many of our audience members saw some pieces of it over the summer because we performed it over in community gardens throughout the Bronx over the summer, like the first 20 minutes to give people an idea of where we were going with it. And yes, it is a through line because what we decided to do, because so much had been already been written about the suffering of our own people, we wanted to shed light on the perpetrators. We want to showcase that landlord. We want to showcase that insurance broker. We want to, you know, we want to Wall Street and the conflicts in our community. We want to know what really a firefighter who was very solidary, who I met and had amusing conversations with, what he was thinking. We have the bodega owner. We have the Puerto Rican journalist.
The very real people.
Yeah.
The information that you're sharing is definitely enticing, and I want to make sure we get the details in
mm-hmm.
the location. We can mention everything except the cost of the tickets. But
sure, no, I understand.
Before we have to close. And mm-hmm. You're directing this piece?
Yes, I wrote it and I directed, but I must clarify that it was ensemble show how different artists in the ensemble, many of them Bronx born and raised, contributed to also the development of the story.
Right. So website information
and it's live music and it'll be also fun.
Yes, great. So the dates and the direct contact so folks can make a plan
Hello?
To be in the space. Website? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Please give the contact information.
Sure. The phone number that you can call and get more information is 718-585-1202. 718-585-1202, and our website is www.pregonesprtt. That's PREGONES, pregonesprtt.org. You can also find us in social media, and we have the postings on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as well.
I'm sure. You sound excited about it, so we're going to be excited for you and close
Thank
out.
Thank you.
Our program this evening with the sounds of Roy Hargrove and spoken word by Q-Tip. I want to thank you so much, Rosalba. I look forward to meeting you, and you're going to be very surprised when I send you a copy of the letter that I received from your company so many years ago. This is going to be a wrap for this edition of Untitled. I'm Malika Lee Whitney, and always a joy to be in your ear. And like I said, we bring in the heat. So Torched is something to put on your agenda. And, of course, also the opportunity to view Decade of Fire. I want to say thank you so much to Vanessa Walsh, as well as Reverend Dr. Nigel Pierce. Thank you all. Roy Harvey,
thank you. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to reclaim our history.
Oh, thank
yes.
you. You
Gracias,
are our
Malika.
History. My pleasure. Max?
I thought you had a commentary.
All right. I can hang up now.
Go right to the music. The commentary in Civil
Can you
Radio.
Picture how a melody... Start to see the colors, filling in with intricate splashes by all the brothers. Michelle is on the joint, you mean Miss Indigay or cello? No wonder why the hump inside this joint is feeling ghetto. A medal or award should be given to these heroes for their efforts of revealing and bringing forth the feeling. I'm reeling, poetic, I say, a great proportion. I hope my little nuance is correct for this distortion. But I say why I say, and who is to say? Cause Roy makes the tune what it is today. Rhythmically, we in this lake of jeans. Know what I mean? It's only right that me and Mr. Wright, we hail from Queens. The overtone of funk is being driven by the students. The benevolence of Roy issued me this jurisprudence. To speak or rhyme, put it in a hip determine. I'm just a humble little germ, just a hip aversion. Poetic, I mean truly indeed her every seed. Cause sprinkles with the essence of life to form our breed. Think about it, sweetie, why we give this to the needy. The musical expression is important for progression. Never stop learning lessons, and neither should y'all. Before we all stand, must acknowledge a fall. Before we get the bounce, we got to reach for the ball. Before we ghetto stroll, we had to get to a crawl. Check it out now, and don't you dare. Bobby Timmons did a joint called That Dear. Check it out now, and do you do. Ronnie Foster did a joint called Mr. Groove. Check it out now, it's how we go. Check it out with my man Roy Hargrove.
Of this radio station in a time like this cannot be overstated. Our progressive programming covering arts and culture, public affairs, social and political issues means so much to many, and that includes you, right? Support WBAI to ensure our impact and continued longevity for a time like this.
This is Imhotep Gary Bird giving double thanks to WBAI listeners. For many years, you've supported my Friday show, The Global Beat Experience, and The Global Beat, where we explore the full dimension of black music and politics. And more recently, you've made my new Sunday evening program, Radio GBE Mind Flight, your gateway to the black experience, a success as well. In that spirit, I hope you show some of that same enthusiasm to some friends of mine who host a new show highlighting the people, music, music, and venues that made Harlem a cultural mecca. It's called the Harlem Connection. You're invited to get on board and take the journey every Friday evening with the GBE at 7, Untitled at 9, and the Harlem Connection at 10, right here on WBAI.
Whether you get up early on Saturday morning or stay up late on Friday night, we have good news for you.
Back of the Book, the only radio program that has endorsed hell, will be there for you every Saturday morning at 5 a.m.
Regular listeners will no longer have to figure out which Saturday morning is the alternate one. Back of the Book, every Saturday morning.